Hello and welcome back, and thanks for listening. As always, Chinese medicine is often seen as more art than science, not necessarily in a judgmental or negative way. It can just seem mysterious to those not reared in a culture that leans into herbal and organic cures. Actually, the interesting twist in the past 100 years or so is that Western medicine is actually favored in China more than traditional Chinese cures. But those ancient Chinese medical texts hold some secrets for modern era researchers, and the effects could touch millions of lives. The two areas under study are chemotherapy and nausea, more on that in a second, and the preservation and prolonged efficacy of donated organs. The ingredients for what were once anecdotal cures are in those ancient Chinese texts.
Right now, transplanted organs, you know, there's a very limited window. You can take a human heart and put it into from a donor and take it into a recipient. And if these chemicals could extend that period, you could ship hearts potentially all around the world.
Yeah.
And how would that change the availability? You know, how many more people would survive, et cetera, et cetera. It's a fascinating piece of the research.
Another example of modern medicine adopting ancient techniques was during the Vietnam War. A North Vietnamese doctor and researcher led a secret project to help the Viet Cong combat a strain of drug-resistant malaria, and it worked. Coming up now is an editor and writer for National Geographic, his cover story about Chinese medicine, research at Yale University, and what it feels like to hold a beating heart in your hands. Well, that starts now.
My name is Peter Gwynn, and I'm a senior editor at National Geographic.
Peter Gwynn, thank you for your time. Do you have any idea how long Nat Geo stick around? Because I have a feeling that their lifespan is years long.
How long they last?
Yeah, well, I mean, like, how often they get passed around, how often that people, like, keep them. I used to library them when I was a kid.
You know, one of the most familiar calls that we get is people saying, you know, my basement is, or my attic is filled with National Geographics. My grandparents collected them. My parents collected them. What can I do with them? I can't keep them anymore, and I can't bear to throw them away.
Right.
And so that is a phenomenon, and there are a lot of libraries that will take them, and there have been different programs trying to figure out what to do with them. But, you know, the answer that we come up with now is they're all available on our digital archive, everything. And probably the best thing you could do is recycle them.
Right. So, Peter, tell me about how you came to want to cover ancient medicine and how you're pulling it forward into the modern age.
You know, this is a really interesting question. I did a couple of stories. It's funny, at National Geographic, how one story will lead you to another story. But several years ago, I was covering the rhino poaching plague that is happening in southern Africa. And so, you know, rhinos are being poached in record numbers. And we noticed a big spike back in around 2006 and going forward from there, that just the numbers were going off the charts. And it turned out that there was, a growing black market in the trade of rhino horn, primarily fed in through Asia. Vietnam seems to be one of the main areas, but then Vietnam's a gateway to other parts of Asia. And the horns were being used for a medicinal cure or different medicinal cures.
Right.
So one of the things that was fascinating, so I went and did a lot of reporting in Vietnam. I talked to a lot of different people that used rhino horn, that prescribed it, different, traditional doctors and things. And the reception to the story about rhino poaching, I mean, it's a horrible thing that's happening to rhinos, and obviously it needs to stop for the species to continue. But I was really kind of taken aback at how a lot of readers reacted, like, you know, with no real understanding or sympathy for people who were seeking, basically just health care, you know. And whether you agree with it or not, there's a reason that people believe this this stuff. So it led to, you know, open the door to go look deeper at what is Chinese medicine, and where do these beliefs come from? And that's kind of, you know, what National Geographic does, is try to get beyond just sort of the surface of a conversation and get deeper into, you know, what's really going on there.
You know, just anecdotally speaking, Chinese medicine in my lifetime, or in my experience, has always been kind of like an alternative medicine last resort almost, but it seems like the mentality of the audience writ large is more open-minded to solutions like Chinese medicine. Is that what you found in your reporting?
It is. I mean, one of the things that that everybody sort of seems to forget about Western medicine is that, you know, things like aspirin are, you know, have their roots in folk remedies. I mean, the ancient Greeks were realizing that, you know, willow bark, if you boiled it, would yield, an acid that turns out to be, you know, an anti-inflammatory, you know, a fever reducer and anti-inflammatory. So, you know, a lot of our own medicine has roots in traditional medicine. And you know, the Chinese have the longest recorded tradition of these traditional medicines. And so, that's one thing. And then the other thing is that, you know, with healthcare in such disarray in the United States, it's so expensive. A lot of people, you know, are struggling to find coverage. And with the rise of the internet, people are turning to a lot of different, not just Chinese medicine, but a lot of different, you know, alternative therapies. And, you know, this is not just happening here in the West. I mean, it's kind of the opposite has happened in China for many years, is that, you know, Western medicine came in and became the standard for Asia, but it melded with a lot of traditions. I mean, traditional medicine just didn't go away. So the two traditions have sort of, you know, melded in Asia. And I think what's happening now is we're seeing, you know, sort of the opposite of that, is that there's, Western medicine is being sort of fused with a lot of traditional medicine, including Chinese medicine.
I'm glad you mentioned the Greeks, because that gives me a chance to say acetyl salicylic acid. Okay, I had to say that. Okay, Peter, I'm looking at your online version of The Apothecary, which is incredible, but you just mentioned something that we really should double down on, and that's the melding of Western modern medicine and ancient Chinese medicine. And I'm looking at four jars, and it's a very striking sub-headline on it that says that there's a promising cancer treatment being developed at Yale known as PHY906. Can you unpack that for us?
Yeah, so that was a fascinating discovery, you know, in the sense to find out about what Dr. Yongqi Cheng was doing at Yale. So he is a Western-trained researcher in pharmacology, and so, you know, his background is chemistry and medicine, you know, from the Western tradition. But he was originally raised in mainland China. His family fled during the war. He came through Taiwan, eventually came to the United States, went to college in the United States, got his PhD in the United States. And he's been working on a variety of different diseases, looking at treatments. And one of the things that he noticed was that when the AIDS virus was at its peak, you know, if you remember back to that time, the thing that really was a breakthrough for scientists then was looking at cocktails of drugs. It wasn't
right.
Just one drug that was going to treat AIDS. It was going to be a combination of different drugs. And it sort of, a bell went off with him in his head, was that, you know, really that's what herbal medicine is, and that's how it's viewed in China, is that each of these herbs brings different chemicals to a cocktail, and then that sort of herb, that tea, they brew it as a tea. That's generally how herbal remedies are delivered in Chinese medicine, and it is a cocktail of things, you know. So one herb is playing one role in the treatment, another herb is playing another role. The combination of these things is more powerful than any one herb. So anyway, he was looking at specifically different kinds of treatments, and one of the things he noticed was that you know, chemotherapy patients really struggled with nausea, and that there was a correlation between how many chemotherapy treatments a patient could take and how long their lifespan would go on after that. So if you were only able to take, say, out of a course of 10 different treatments for one session, one period of chemotherapy, if you were only able to do, you know, half of those, you were less likely to live as long as the person that could get through all 10. So the idea is, and the big barrier there was, and so he thought, well, there's a lot of treatments in Chinese medicine that address nausea. He knew this from, you know, his childhood and from some of the research that he looked at. And being at Yale, Yale has this big library of lots of Chinese treatises on medicine in the original Chinese. He sent one of his assistants to go and read these, looking for treatments that dealt with nausea and also ones that had four or fewer herbs, because it becomes a Rubik's Cube. Each one of these formulas, the more herbs you add, the more variables that you have to account for. Mm. When was the herb harvested? What altitude was it grown at? What was the soil? What was the soil content like? All sort of things can affect the efficacy of the chemicals in these herbs. And this has been one of the major barriers for herbal medicines. Western pharmaceutical companies have been looking at herbal medicines forever. They realize there are powerful potential treatments there, but how do you create this in a uniform way? When you take a Tylenol, it is always the exact Tylenol. Mm-hmm. It is a medically, chemically created thing that's always the same thing. So you can make it uniform.
That was Peter Gwynn. He's an editor at National Geographic and the author of the story headlined, "Can Ancient Remedies Be Tomorrow's Cures?" It's about how ancient cures are changing modern medical research and techniques. It's in the January 2019 edition of National Geographic, and it lives forever at nationalgeographic.com. Please check out the digital apothecary that goes with that article. It's fantastic. All other links are in the show notes for the podcast or posted at kgoradio.com. Coming up after the break, we get part two of my chat with Peter Gwynn about ancient Chinese medical texts informing modern-day research in medicine. We get into chemotherapy, nausea, and donated organs. That's next. Please stick around. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics.